The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, the Lou Holtz Laugh Club, Clem McCarthy has the call of the 1950 Kentucky Derby, Jimmy Powers narrates Babe Ruth on the Grantland Rice Story, and the comedy adventures of My Son Jeep from 1953. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the golden age of radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Clem McCarthy has the call of the 1950 Kentucky Derby. Jimmy Powers narrates Babe Ruth on the Grantland Rice Story and the comedy adventures of My Son Jeep from 1953. But first, a visit with the Lou Holtz Laugh Club as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
And now, here he is, chairman of the Laugh Club, Lou Holtz.
Well, thank you. Before we get the ball rolling in the Laugh Club, Miss Ginger, how come you're late again today?
I got home late last night. I went down to see my cousin fight.
Your cousin is a prize fighter?
Is he a fighter? Mr. Holtz, if you get into an argument with him and start counting up to 10, he automatically lies down.
He's a fine fighter, and he was fighting last night?
That's right. It was a question of his brains against the other fellow's brawn, but he couldn't get that through his thick skull.
Oh, he's bright, huh? How did your cousin make out?
Oh, he carried the other guy for a few rounds just to make him look good, and then, boom, the other fella knocked him out.
And was this, may I ask, a surprise?
Surprise? Listen, Mr. Holtz, in this fight, the odds against my cousin were 12 to 5.
There were 12 to 5 he wouldn't win?
12 to 5 he wouldn't live.
You know, if there's a lull in this conversation, you'll be in the middle of it.
You know, Mr. Holtz, when my cousin was knocked down, the referee kept right on counting. 10, 11, 12, 13, right up to 20.
My goodness, Ginger. And what did your cousin do?
Nothing, Mr. Holtz. He just rolled over and said, "You're being very kind, Mr. Referee, but I'm through for the evening."
Oh, fine. I can see that this fella has a great career behind him.
Oh, after last night's injury, he decided to give up boxing.
He got hurt, huh? How?
Well, last night when they rubbed his back with alcohol, it strained his neck trying to lick it off.
Meetings adjourned.
Say, you fellas know how often the girls win out in spelling bees or reading contests? Well, nowadays, I'm hearing of a lot of times when the girls are winning out in collecting comic buttons in that new series from Packages of Kellogg's Pet. Of course, whenever that happens, the boys get busy right away, and the race is on. Good fun it is, too, because everybody gets a kick out of those true-to-life pictures of your favorite comic strip characters, like Chief Brandon, with his uniform and his official badge, and Tess Trueheart with her red hat and long blonde hair, and Superman himself, complete with bright blue jersey and flying red cape and Superman insignia. So, fellas, don't you let those girls get ahead of you. And girls, don't let the fellas get ahead of you. Everybody, pitch in. It's easy, you know. You don't send in any money, not even a box stop. And you can't buy these comic buttons anywhere. But every time that you open a package of Kellogg's Pep, there's your snappy prize. And there's some mighty snappy eating, too, because Pep is a whiz of a breakfast cereal. Tastes so crisp and sunny and golden toasted that, well, you practically can't resist it. Pep's good for you, too. Mom knows it's a grand dish to start off a cold, wintry day. So ask Mom to get P-E-P, the sunshine cereal, Kellogg's Pep.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Allison, Jeep's father, bringing you the weekly news from Grove Falls. This week, our show should have a special interest for all you fathers with teenage daughters, especially if you also happen to have a young man around the house who takes his brotherly responsibilities very seriously. I refer, of course, to the prop and mainstay of my declining years, my son, Jeep.
Yes, it's My Son Jeep, the bright and warm-hearted adventures of the Allison family of Grove Falls, starring Donald Cook as Doc and introducing young Martin Houston as wonderful, unpredictable 10-year-old Jeep Allison.
It's strange, but all the crises in our household have one thing in common. I'm always the last one to know what's going on. Well, naturally, when somebody finally gets around to telling me, I might act a little surprised. Well, who wouldn't? This particular surprise started one day when Jeep and Peggy were walking home from school together.
Hey, Peggy, you know that Emily Monroe that sits in front of me in class? You know, she's the one who always laughs at me when I can't answer a question.
Uh-huh.
Well, I sure got back at her today, the dumb bunny.
You did?
Yeah. Miss Kohlhauser asked her what year Pompey was buried.
She did?
So Emily said she didn't know he was dead. Boy, I sure did laugh.
Did you?
Trouble is, Miss Kohlhauser called on me next. I didn't know when he died either.
Well, that's good.
Hey, you're not even listening to me. What's the matter with you?
Nothing.
There is so. And you got that dopey look on your face.
Now, that's all you know about it, Jeep Allison. I suppose you tell me Elizabeth Taylor looks dopey.
What's she got to do with you?
Well, it just so happens that this is the look she uses when she meets her man.
Well, you've never even been out on a date. What would you know about men?
This is not a topic I care to discuss with children.
You mean you do have a date?
Never mind.
Oh, come on, Peggy. Tell me.
Why should I?
Well, I'm your brother, and I got a right to know.
Well, I suppose there's no harm in telling you. After all, one of these days he might even be your brother-in-law.
Gosh.
One never knows. It happened to Elizabeth Taylor in her last picture.
But Peggy!
What?
I'm too young to be a brother-in-law.
Oh, Jeep, he's so divine.
Huh?
All the girls are crazy about him.
Who?
Roscoe Entwiler. Oh, what a beautiful name. He's the handsomest boy in class. And he's brand new. He's just the absolute catch of the season.
Say, Barbara, I was looking at the desk calendar. You know something?
Don't tell me I got your appointments mixed up.
Oh, of course not.
Well, then what happened?
Oh, nothing happened. Spring's just around the corner.
Oh, is that all?
Oh, it's a wonderful feeling. In the spring, a young man's fancy...
Why, Dr. Allison.
Yeah, you didn't know I was poetic, huh? A loaf of bread, a jug of wine, and thou beside me singing in the wilderness.
My, my.
Yeah, it's in the air.
I had no idea weather affected you this way.
A woman in our hours of ease, uncertain, coy, and hard to please.
Bob, what if a patient should walk in?
Might learn a few lines of poetry.
Yes, and by tomorrow morning, it'll be all over town that Dr. Allison quotes poetry to his receptionist.
To his young and pretty receptionist. Anyway, it might bring in more business. You know, a sonnet with every pill, a poem with every diagnosis.
Did you say spring was just around the corner? It's here.
Listen, I feel good, and I don't care who knows it. Let's go to a movie tonight. I feel romantic.
All right, I'd love to. What's playing?
The Grandson of Dracula and Bride of Frankenstein.
Well, I'll say one thing for you. You know the way to a girl's heart. Scare her to death.
Well, hi, Jeep. Love goes toward love as schoolboys toward their books, but love from love toward school with heavy looks.
You feeling all right, Pop?
Hey, what's the matter with this family? I get a little exuberant, so right away I'm sick.
Aren't you a little late getting home from school, Jeep?
Well, I walked home with Peggy, and you know what a slowpoke she is. And today she was even worse. Moaning along, not even watching where she was going.
She probably had something on her mind, dear.
She sure did. Roscoe Entweiler.
I beg your pardon?
I said Roscoe Entweiler.
I know what you said, but what is it?
It's a boy.
This has all the earmarks of one of those Allison conversations where nobody understands what anybody else is saying.
Yeah, you're right. Who is Roscoe Entweiler?
Some drip Peggy's got a date with.
Do you know him, Jeep?
Never even heard of him before.
Well, then you shouldn't call him names. After all, he might be a very nice... What did you say?
When?
Peggy has a date?
Oh, that's right, Bob.
Well, what's wrong, Bob?
Jeep, aren't you hungry?
Huh?
Don't you feel like eating?
I always feel like eating.
Well, then go out and tell Mrs. Bixby I said you could have a piece of pie before supper.
Golly, you mean it, Bob?
Yeah, go ahead.
You better give me a note, then.
A note?
Well, saying I can have a piece of pie before supper. She'd never believe me.
Scat.
Well, I'm going. Oh, Roscoe, you're so divine.
Hey, can you imagine?
Will you stop pacing up and down, Bob? What's got into you?
Well, you heard, Jeep. Peggy's got a date.
Well, what's so terrible about that?
My daughter going out with an Entwistle.
Entweiler.
Well, I don't care what his name is. Peggy's too young.
Well, she's going on 14, Bob.
I don't care if she's going on 40. She's too young.
These days, they start going out a little younger.
Did you?
Yes, didn't you?
At 14? Why, I wasn't even walking yet.
Oh, now, calm down. There's nothing out of the ordinary in this, you know. Once in every man's life.
What?
Well, every father has to go through the shock of seeing his daughter off on her first date.
Oh, well, I know that, but it's too soon. She's only a freshman in high school.
That's just when they start going out. Relax. This boy will probably take her to the movies, load up on popcorn and candy, and then bring her back home.
Oh, my goodness.
What is it now?
Now, I was just wondering, do they still hold hands in the balcony?
I have something very vital to discuss with you, Mrs. Bixby.
Well, land's sake, child, what's wrong?
I haven't got a stitch of clothing to my name.
Well, what do you call what you got on, a suit of armor?
Well, of course not. But it's too young for me. All my clothes are too young for me.
I'll lend you some of mine.
Please. I'm serious. I have nothing I could possibly wear tonight.
Well, now, what's so special about tonight?
It just so happens that I have a date.
With Mary Patricia Pearson?
Now, don't be naive. I have a date with a man.
You got a what with a who?
Roscoe is calling for me at 7 o'clock.
Who is Roscoe?
Oh, you wouldn't know him. He's new in town. Oh, he's divine.
Mm-hmm.
So you simply must help me pick out the right dress to wear.
Well, what's the rush, honey? You still got 3 hours.
Oh, but I've got so much to do. My hair, my nails, a mud pack.
A mud pack? What's that for?
To rejuvenate my skin, of course.
Well, you ask a foolish question, you get a foolish answer.
So, will you come upstairs to help me as soon as you can, Mrs. Bixby?
Oh, of course I will, child. But now, who's this Roscoe? I like the idea of your going out with somebody we don't know.
Oh, please, don't be Victorian.
Yeah, you told your father yet?
Oh, I'm going to now. Oh, Mrs. Bixby, wait till he hears I've snagged the catch of the season. Can't you just see his face?
I sure can.
Oh, he'll be crazy about Roscoe. He's such an angel.
An angel, huh? Well, when he flies in the door tonight, I'm going to have a little talk with him.
Honestly, Father, will you stop pacing up and down?
I like pacing up and down.
You're going to wear a hole in that rug.
This is no laughing matter. You don't understand. You've never been a father.
You're acting like you've never been a father either.
Well, I don't see what all this fuss is about. Roscoe's parents are giving him a party, and he's just the most eligible bachelor in school.
A bachelor at 14.
Please, Father. 14 and a half.
Peggy's right, Bob. You're making too much of this. It's a perfectly harmless date.
What did I say it wasn't? It's just too sudden, that's all. I'm not prepared for it.
Prepared? You're not going with Roscoe, I am.
I know that. It might not be a bad idea, though. Barbara, do they still use chaperones these days?
Bob.
Oh, Father, you wouldn't.
Okay, forget it.
Oh, I should hope so.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
Aren't you being a little unreasonable, Bob? Come on, admit it.
Well, I suppose you're right. It isn't that I'm against her going out, but couldn't she wait 7 or 8 years?
Whether you like it or not, Peggy is old enough to go to a party with a young man.
Well, maybe she is, but who is this young man? What do we know about him?
I told you, Father. His family just moved to town.
There, you see, nobody knows a thing about him.
Oh, Bob, stop exaggerating. He must be a perfectly nice boy or Peggy wouldn't have anything to do with him.
Oh. Well, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, you're right. Now, I have been unreasonable.
Yes, you have.
And stubborn.
You're right.
And even a little pig-headed.
Uh-huh.
Well, stop agreeing with me. Peggy, honey, you go right ahead and have a date and have fun. Enjoy yourself. I was a little worried, I admit it, but I'm all over it now.
Oh, Pop! Oh, you darling! Oh, I'm going upstairs and start getting ready.
That was quite a hug you got.
Did you hear that? She called me Pop. She hasn't done that in months.
That's your reward for being a nice guy. I'll go up and see if I can't help Peggy.
I'm glad I had the sense to let Peggy decide this for herself. Not many fathers would do that. Most of them would kick up a big fuss, throw their weight around. I'm glad I'm different. Makes it easier for Peggy. She'll enjoy herself more, too, knowing I'm not worried. Yeah, but this Roscoe, who is he? He comes from out of town. That could meet anywhere. For all we know, he could be fresh out of prison. Oh, no, that's impossible. He's not old enough. But his father is. Oh, he could have been in prison. No, that's silly. But I know one thing. When that boy shows up tonight, I'm going to have a little talk with him.
Hey, Pop, is there somebody in here with you?
No, why?
I heard you talking.
Oh, well, I must have been talking to myself.
You know, I do that sometimes, too.
You do?
Sure, when I got problems. You got a problem, Pop?
I guess you might call it that.
Want to tell me about it?
I don't think so, son.
Why not? You and me should always talk things over. After all, we're the men of the family.
Yes, we are that.
Well, then.
Well, I don't think you're quite old enough to understand this, Jeep.
Oh, is it about Peggy Thayer?
Well, how'd you know?
I just guessed. You think she's too young, huh?
I don't know, son. At first I think she is, and then I think she isn't. The trouble is, this is Peggy's first date, and I don't know how to act. All of a sudden, I've got a pretty daughter instead of just a little girl. It's upsetting.
Yeah, I guess it would be.
Yeah, but the worst thing is, nobody ever heard of this boy she's going out with.
Well, you'll meet him when he comes to get Peggy.
Well, a lot of good that'll do me. Suppose I decide I don't like him. What am I going to do? I can't throw him out of the house.
Why not?
Well, it wouldn't be polite.
Supper's ready, everybody.
Oh, come on, son. Let's go wash up.
Gee, poor Pop. He's awful worried. Well, no two ways about it. When that Roscoe gets here, I'll just have to have a little talk with him.
Aren't you ready yet, Bob?
Oh, I'm ready, but where is he?
What are you talking about?
That Roscoe boy. What are you talking about?
Oh, I thought you were taking me to the movies tonight.
Oh, well, I've got to wait till this kid shows up. It'd be just like him to sneak in the back way to avoid me.
Bob, you're not making any sense. You built this boy up as a combination bluebeard and a second story man.
Well, it's natural that I'd want to meet my daughter's first date, isn't it?
Very natural. Why do you keep looking at your watch?
He was supposed to be here at 7 o'clock.
But it's only 20 minutes of now.
Well, the least he can do is be on time.
All right, have your talk with him. Then we'll go to the movies.
I can't go out tonight, Barbara.
Why not?
With Peggy out on her first date, I've got to stay home
And what?
And worry. Oh, well, he's here. What'll I say to him?
Well, the first thing should be good evening.
Uh-huh.
For heaven's sakes, go answer the door.
Yeah. Why don't you go?
Oh, no, that's not my department. I'll go upstairs and help Peggy.
What's this big rush? It's not even quarter to seven. You're early.
Yes, sir. Is Miss Peggy Allison at home, sir?
Where'd you think she'd be, out in the garage?
Beg pardon, sir?
No. I beg yours. Come on in.
My name's Entwiler, sir.
Mine's Allison.
Not Dr. Allison.
Why not?
Oh, you look much too young to be Peggy's father.
Oh, you think I look more like a brother?
Yes, sir.
A brother's tan.
I meant her older brother.
She hasn't got one. Besides, I assure you, I am her father.
I never would have believed it.
Well, if it'll make you any happier, I have some cards and letters that'll prove my identity.
No, sir, I'll take your word for it.
Thank you.
Yes, sir?
I suppose you're a Cub Scout.
Oh, no, sir, I'm much too old.
You are? Oh, well, yes, of course. Do you like school?
Yes, sir, I'm on the basketball team.
Well, that's nice. What do you do for a living?
Sir?
Oh, I mean, what does your father do?
He's a lawyer.
Oh, he is?
Yes, sir, he has his own offices.
Oh, really? Well, I didn't know. That's a fine, responsible profession. Well, I guess I've learned everything I need to know. Say, if you'll excuse me, Mr. Entwiler. Oh, just one thing. I want my daughter home early. Is that understood?
Oh, yes, sir.
And when I say early, I mean early.
Who's that out there in the hall? Oh. Who are you, young man?
I'm Roscoe Entwiler, and I'm waiting for Miss Peggy Allison.
Well, now, why are you standing out here? Why ain't you sitting in the living room?
Nobody invited me to.
Land's sake, you have to forgive the doctor. He's got a lot on his mind. Come on in and sit.
Thank you. You must be Mrs. Bixby. Peggy's told me all about you.
What?
I beg your pardon?
What she told you about me?
Well, that you were a very nice lady.
So you're taking our little Peggy out, huh?
Yes, ma'am. If she ever comes downstairs.
Oh, she'll be along. You know how girls are.
No, ma'am, I don't. This is my first date.
Oh, I see. Tell me something, young man. You like Peggy?
Sure. I think she's swell.
Well, then I'm going to give you some advice. If you want to take her out again, just be sure and bring her home early tonight.
Oh, I will.
And when I say early, I mean early.
Never saw so much fuss over just an old date. Oh, is this him?
This is Peggy's brother, Jeffrey. And this is the young man who's calling for Peggy.
I'm very pleased to meet you.
Hi.
Now, Jeep, you entertain Mr. Entwiler until Peggy comes down here.
I've heard a lot about you from Peggy, Jeep.
I'll bet.
You certainly have a very beautiful sister.
Peggy? Beautiful? Well, if you say so.
Well.
One Indian wrestle?
Huh?
Well, Mrs. Bixby said I should entertain you.
Well, this is a new suit. I wouldn't want to get it wrinkled.
Stand up a minute.
What?
Stand next to me. I want to see how much taller you are. Yeah, I guess you're tall enough for. Why are you two going tonight?
To a party at my house.
What's it for?
My folks are giving it.
Why, is it their birthday?
No, it's so I can get to know some of the kids in school.
Oh. Where do you live?
2117 Crestview Terrace.
Gee, that's all the way on the other side of town.
Well, what of it?
You mean Peggy's got to walk all the way over there?
Listen, we're taking a bus.
Oh. What does your father do?
He's a lawyer.
Does he make a lot of money?
Do you always ask all these questions when your sister goes out?
Well, I don't know. She's never gone out before.
Oh?
So you better bring her home early.
I will. You don't have to worry. I'll bring her home real early.
Shall I deal another hand?
Not for me. I'm cleaned out.
Oh, Doctor, it's only matches.
Matches or money, I never seem to keep either of them very long.
Doctor, I've never heard you complain as much as you have today.
Really? Well, I better watch myself. Maybe it's the change of season.
The approach of spring seems to be your excuse for anything. This afternoon you were quoting poetry.
Oh, come on, Doctor. Quote me some poetry.
Oh, well, I'm not a water faucet. Be turned on and off at will.
Oh, come on. I'll fix waffles for you tomorrow morning.
Promise?
Yep.
Okay. Making toast by the fireside, nurse fell into the grate and died. But what makes it 10 times worse, all the toast was burnt with nurse.
Charming. Cold-blooded, but charming.
It ain't exactly what I was expecting.
You didn't specify what kind of poetry. You still owe me those waffles.
Oh, you'll get them, Doctor.
Yeah, I want mine with strawberry jam.
I like mine better with honey.
And how would you like yours, Doctor?
Oh, I think he's a very nice youngster.
What?
Young Etwiler. Nice manners. I'm not the least bit worried.
We're back there, are we?
No. I'm not stewing about it anymore.
You don't have to, Pop. He's plenty tall enough for.
At this point, I wouldn't care if he was only 2 feet high. I just wanted to have a good time.
Oh, didn't she look pretty when she went out?
She looked so grown up.
Mm-hmm. You know something? She's too good for that Roscoe.
Land sake, who's that?
I just want you all to know that I never want to speak to you again as long as I live.
Peggy, what are you doing here?
Well, is the party over, honey? It's only 8:45.
You have completely and absolutely ruined my entire life. I'll never be able to show my face and grow full again.
Well, what in the world?
All of you, will you please stay put? I'll go up and see if I can find out what this is all about.
If that Entwistle said anything to upset her, I'll have it out with his father.
And I'll bet you can lick him too, Pop.
My goodness, Barbara's been up there with Peggy for 20 minutes.
What could the boy have said to her?
Oh, wait a minute. We're all forgetting something. When that child came running in here, she didn't say anything about Roscoe. She said she never wanted to speak to us again.
Hey, that's right.
What do you suppose she meant?
She must have meant she didn't want to speak to us again.
But we certainly aren't to blame for her coming home early.
Well, that's what I don't understand. When she left here, she looked so happy.
Hey, maybe his folks said something to her.
That's it. It can't be anything else. They must have insulted Peggy.
Oh, but how?
Here comes Miss Miller. Maybe she knows.
You're a nice-looking bunch of conspirators, I must say.
What'd she say, Barbara?
Well, just what I should have expected. It was your fault, all of you.
Well, that's ridiculous. We didn't do a thing.
No. Why do you think Roscoe brought her home to 8:45? Because he was scared stiff.
Oh, scared of what?
Of the Allison family.
Oh, nonsense. How could we scare anybody?
It wasn't easy, but you managed.
But how?
By ganging up on him. It's bad enough for a youngster on his first day to have one person interview him, but when three people do it, it's...
Three? Well, it was just me, and all I said was to get her home early.
Well, I talked to the boy, too.
You did? What'd you say?
Get her home early.
Oh.
There, you see?
Oh, but that's only two. Oh, wait a minute. Jeep?
Yes, Bob?
What did you say?
Get her home early.
Now, you all ought to be very proud of yourselves. He certainly got her home early.
Oh, poor kid, but I never for a minute thought that she...
That was the trouble. You didn't think.
I had to open my big mouth.
Wasn't just you. I'm to blame, too.
No, it's my fault.
No, it's mine.
Well, gosh, don't I get any of the credit?
If it'll make you feel any happier, you're to blame, too.
Now that you've divided the blame into three equal slices like half a pie, how about a thought for Peggy?
You're right, Barbara. The first thing I'm going to do is go up and apologize to her.
Oh, let me go first, Doctor, please. You know, women can handle these things much better.
Gee, Pop. Sure gonna be quiet around here if Peggy never speaks to any of us again.
And I prided myself on being the kind of father who let his children think for themselves. Well, live and learn.
That's a nice sentiment, Bob. But more important, what are you going to do?
Well, what can I do? The evening's already spoiled for her.
Think she'll write us notes?
What, she?
Well, suppose we're at the table and she wants me to pass the potatoes or something. How's she gonna let me know if she doesn't talk?
You think I ought to call Roscoe and apologize?
Well, it'd be a nice gesture, but I don't think it would help Peggy.
Well, it might make him feel more like taking her out again sometime.
Hey, Pop, I got a better idea.
What?
When you call him back, ask him if he doesn't want to bring Peggy back to the party.
Tonight? But it's after 9:00.
What of it? It'd make Peggy feel good again, and she wouldn't be mad at us anymore.
Jeep's got the right idea, Bob.
Well, you think Roscoe would come all the way back?
Sure, he likes Peggy.
I'll better be so glad you called up. They don't run all the way over here.
It's worth a try.
Okay, I'll do it.
And don't forget, Pop, whatever you do, don't tell him he has to bring her home early.
$208, $209, $210, $211.
What on earth are you counting?
Why should you have all the fun? If you're going to march around the living room all night, I can at least amuse myself by counting the number of steps you take.
I'm glad you can take this so lightly. Evidently, you're not aware that it's 27 minutes after 11.
Evidently, you're not aware that your watch is slow. It's 28 minutes to 12.
Well, that makes it even worse. Oh, why did I listen to Jeep?
Because he had a good idea.
No, because the two of you badgered me into it. I never should have let her go out again.
I thought we went through all this.
But it's different now. It's late. Did you see me worry the first time she went out?
I did.
Well, that's different. Anyway, something might have happened to her. She might be in an accident.
Oh, that's silly, Bob. The boy's too young to drive a car.
Well, who said anything about a car? He could have taken her out on his bicycle.
A fresh pot of coffee, Doctor. Could you stand another cup?
Oh, no, thanks, Mrs. Bixby. I have coffee coming out of my ears now.
Golly, isn't Peggy home yet?
Jeep, what are you doing up?
Well, I heard Miss Bixby out in the kitchen. I wanted to see what was going on.
Oh, I hate to admit it, but I'm getting a little anxious. It's kind of late.
You see, Barbara, Miss Bixby's worried, too.
Now, stop it, both of you.
Want me to call him up for you, Pop?
Oh, wait a minute. There she is.
Thank you, Roscoe. Thank you for the most perfect and divine evening of my life.
See, Pop, what are you worrying? Peggy was having a good time.
Hello, all you darlings. Father, oh, how perfectly sweet of you to wait up for me. And Miss Miller and Mrs. Bixby. Oh, and my darling little brother.
Oh, mush.
You really enjoyed yourself, didn't you, honey?
Oh, it was an absolutely superb gathering. Just everyone was there.
Gee, they must have a big house.
Oh, dear little G. Well, good night, everyone. I'm off to get my beauty sleep.
Gosh.
You took the word right out of my mouth.
I'm glad this don't happen every night. I just couldn't stand it.
Guess we can all go to bed now. Well, Pop.
All of a sudden, I've got a grown-up daughter.
And all of a sudden, I realize it's close to midnight. I'm tired.
Oh, well, of course you must be. I'll drive you home right away.
And after this, Pop, see that Miss Miller gets home early.
My Son Jeep was created and written by Walter Black and William Mendrick and directed by Dan Sutter. Lynn Allen is heard as Barbara Miller, Joan Lazor as Peggy, and Leona Powers as Mrs. Bixby. With Peter Fernandez as Roscoe and featuring young Martin Houston as 10-year-old Jeep. Starring in the role of Doc is one of America's finest actors and most versatile comedians, Donald Cook. And now this is Fred Collins inviting you to be with us again next Sunday, same time, same station, for another transcribed visit with America's favorite family, the Allisons of Grove Falls, and My Son, Jeep.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio and My Son, Jeep from 1953, starring Martin Houston, Joan Lazor, and Donald Cook. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s, when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, Jimmy Powers narrates Babe Ruth on the Grantland Rice Story. But first, Clem McCarthy has the call of the 1950 Kentucky Derby on WHAS Radio as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Track is fast. The pace is going to be fast. And they're coming. And your host got away good on the inside. And right beside him is Mr. Trouble. And Dooley. And Sunglow. And Hill Prince. Hill Prince is well up. And so is Trumpet King. As they come to the stand, Hawley on the outside is doing all right. And now Hill Prince has dropped back. And Sunglow on the inside is astonishingly close up. And your host goes by the stand, a length and a half on the lead. Black George is in second place. And it is Mr. Trouble lying third. Hawley is fourth. And Middle Ground is fifth. And in sixth place is Trumpet King. Oil Capital is seventh. And around that turn, Sunglow is eighth. And on the mark is ninth. And slipping through on the inside as they go into the backstretch. And now down that backstretch, your host is two lengths in the lead. And Black George is second by four lengths. Mr. Trouble is third. Moving up with a rush on the outside is Oil Capital in fourth place. And on the inside is Middle Ground. And right back in there is Hawley now beginning to tire. And Hill Prince is moving through. Hill Prince is now in seventh place and trying to slip between horses, but he got blocked. He's got to wait. And they're going to your host. Mr. Trouble is taking him right by the head. Mr. Trouble has got your host and says, come on. But Johnny Longdon has got something left. Your host meets the challenge on the outside. But Mr. Trouble has got plenty up his sleeve. And Mr. Trouble is in there fighting with Douglas Dodson on the inside. He slipped through on the inside of your host. Your host is coming again. Gamer than they thought he might. And they're now up there head and head. And Middle Ground is coming to them in third place as they hit that stretch. And it's now Mr. Trouble. Mr. Trouble into the stretch. Right beside him, your host fighting again, but they came very wide. And slipping through on the inside, trying to... And here comes Hill Prince on the outside. Hill Prince with a rush. Johnny Longdon's at the whip on your host. Fighting gamer than anybody thought. He's still there battling. Only got 200 yards to come. Mr. Trouble's driving. Hill Prince swerved over. He's trying to come through between horses. And ladies and gentlemen, believe me or not, the horse supposed... There's Middleburg coming on the outside. Middleburg on the outside took that lead in the last 50 yards. Middle Ground, the winner, Hill Prince second, Mr. Trouble third.
This is Jimmy Powers coming your way with another Grantland Rice story. Hi there, this is Jimmy Powers bringing you the colorful life of the late and great Granny Rice, based on his best-selling autobiography, The Tumult and the Shouting, published by A.S. Barnes & Company. Previously, we journeyed with Granny through the early days of his life, his birth in Tennessee in 1880, his boyhood in Nashville, his college days at Vanderbilt, and his subsequent breaking in as a sports writer for various papers in Tennessee and Georgia, to Cleveland, home again to Nashville, and finally to New York for his first big shot at fame with the Evening Mail in 1910. After Teddy Roosevelt and after the First World War, before the Depression and the WPA, there was an era that's come to be known as the Roaring Twenties, and also the Golden Age of Sports. In those days, a few lucky ones donned earphones, huddled over their crystal sets, cursed the static, and screamed as Tunney took the long count. But most avid sports fans had the long wait until the next morning's newspapers hit the street to find out who won and just what had happened. Even though 135,000 people contributed to the first $2 million gate at the Dempsey-Tunney fight, another 25 million sport fans had to know what happened, blow by blow, and the newspaper writers told them. And even though 74,000 could jam into the house that Ruth built to see Ruth mince his way around the bases, another 25 million could hardly wait for the late edition to learn if Babe had slammed another one. Today brings Granny face to face with a young and truly great southpaw pitcher for the world champion Boston Red Sox, George Herman Babe Ruth. So, once again, with a sincere bow to the spirit of Grantland Rice, I turn the page and in first person continue for your enjoyment the tumult and the shouting. The first time I saw Babe Ruth was in the spring of 1919 at Tampa, Florida. I'd been with our troops in France the previous year, so Ruth was news to me. Babe blasted a batting practice pitch clear out of the park into a plowed field. I gauged that hit as about 500 feet. While Ruth hit, I watched, and Ed Barrow, the Red Sox manager, talked. "Ruth was our main holdout," said Barrow. "He's been signed to a 3-year contract. At 24, this fellow can become the greatest single thing that's happened to baseball." "Babe," I said, "I was watching your swing. You swing like no pitcher I ever saw." "With my swing, it's all or nothing at all," replied Babe. "I copied it after Joe Jackson's. His is the perfectest." Of all the sluggers spawned by the advent of the lively ball, Babe remains the only one I ever knew who never shortened or choked his grip when the count reached 2 strikes. He gripped his bat at the very end with the knob of the handle palmed in his right hand. Babe liked plenty of lumber in his war clubs. Many of his bats weighed 42 ounces. That's about a half pound more than the average. That spring, the Red Sox and McGraw's Giants played an exhibition series. I hung around for several games to watch Ruth, being converted from a pitcher to an outfielder, slug and play left field. In the first game, he hit the loftiest shot I ever saw, some 6 miles over the right field fence. Bill McGeehan, then sports editor of the New York Tribune, who didn't impress easily, wrote, "The ball sailed so high that when it came down, it was coated with ice." Shortly after, I turned out a bit of verse entitled, "Son of Swat, Babe Ruth." When you can lean upon the ball and lay the seasoned ash against it, the ballpark is a trifle small, no matter how far out they've fenced it. In January 1920, Colonel Jake Rupert paid Red Sox owner Harry Frazee $125,000 outright for Babe, plus a $350,000 loan. That transaction remains baseball's all-time bargain. Matter of fact, not only did Rupert buy a team named Ruth, it remained for this big, overgrown youngster from the Baltimore slums to lift baseball on his back and return it to the aura of respectability. You see, the Black Sox scandal occurred during the 1919 World Series. I'll touch on that later. But let it be said that if a slugger of Babe's magnitude hadn't come along to capture the imagination of the crowd by socking the ball clean out of the lot where it couldn't be tampered with, baseball might well have gone down the drain of mediocrity. Some years later, I was with Colonel Rupert at St. Petersburg, Florida, after he had signed Babe to a 2-year contract for $80,000 a year. And Rupert commented, "Who are we kidding? I could pay Root $200,000 a year, and he wouldn't be overpaid." Somehow things didn't just happen. They exploded when the Babe was my sidekick. I once had him on a national radio hookup with Graham McNamee in charge. At the last minute, the Babe's carefully rehearsed script became scrambled. Before I could throw a halter on him, he was off and running. McNamee was frantic, the orchestra leader was frantic, the producer with his stopwatch mind was frantic as Babe rambled on and on. At one point, the Babe was supposed to refer to the Duke of Wellington's historic remark that the Battle of Waterloo had been won on the playing fields of Eton. The Babe came out with this gem. "As Duke Ellington once said, the Battle of Waterloo was won on the playing fields of Elkton." Later, I asked Babe how he could louse up one short statement so completely. "Well, Grant," he said, About that Wellington guy, I wouldn't know. Ellington, yes. As for that Eaton business, well, I married my first wife in Elkton, Maryland, and I always hated the place. It must have stuck. But perhaps for Ruth, his most embarrassing and at the same time his most hilarious moment occurred on the evening we dined on the outskirts at St. Petersburg during spring training. It was quite a dinner. Among the guests I had invited were the Walter Lippmans. The dinner was a huge success until the dignified Mrs. Lippman asked Ruth to describe the famous home run he called in the 32 series against the Cubs. "It's like this, Boom Babe, bigger than a freshly laundered barn in white gabardine and puffing on a huge cigar. I'm riding the stuffing out of the Cubs, telling them they're the cheapest pack of crumb bums for what they did to our guy, little Mark Koenig, an ex-Yankee who shortstopped them down the home stretch and then was cut in for a measly half share of the series swag. Well, I pack one into the stands in the first inning, but in the fifth, it's tied 4-4 when I'm up with nobody on base. The Chicago fans are giving me the works. Charlie Root, the Cubs pitcher, breezes those first two pitches by, both strikes. The mob's tearing down Wrigley Field. I shake my fist after that first strike. I know it was good. And after the second, it was in there too. I wave my bat at those bellowing bleachers right where I aim to park the ball. Ruth throws it, and I hit that blankety-blank ball on the nose right over the fence. How do you like those apples, you so-and-sos? I yell at Ruth as I start around the bases. By the time I reach home, I'm almost falling down. I'm laughing so hard. And that's how it happened. The Babe's erudite explanation finished, a battered Mrs. Lippman mumbled that they'd have to be leaving. "Why did you use that language?" I asked Babe. "What the heck, Grant?" he snorted. "You heard her ask me what happened, so I told her." And that's how the most famed of home runs happened. Ruth may not have been at his best before the mic or in the drawing room, but he was the greatest single magnet sports has ever known. 6 months a year, from 1919 until his final game in 1935, Babe packed the stands from New York to Tokyo. I've ridden in cars with him all over the map. Everywhere, the mobs would wave or call his name, and the Babe would answer, "Hiya, Mom. Hello, Pop." And then he'd turn to me and ask, "Grant, how can they miss this silly mug?" Children loved him, perhaps because his love for kids was completely sincere. I dined with him on the eve of the World Series in Chicago in 32. He always ate in his room before games to avoid mob scenes. "I've got to go for a short trip, Grant," he said. "Where are you going on the night before a World Series game?" "I'll tell you, but if you print it, I'll shoot you. I'm taking this baseball to a sick kid on the other side of town. I promised his mother and father I'd come." Well, their flat was 20 or 30 miles away. The Babe spent 2 hours on the road that night, and there was no publicity. Babe, you see, was a sucker for parents who loved kids, because as a kid, Babe never knew what real parents were. For the 30 years I knew him, I never saw him really sore at anybody. Deeply hurt, yes, particularly when he finally realized the Yankees had no managerial berth for him. But in his remarks and actions, the Babe was kind. That's why I hope that the Babe's home run record of 60 will never be eclipsed. Many of his countless other records have since tumbled, but that mark of 60, well, Babe, wherever you are, kicking your heels around on some king-sized cloud, I hope it remains yours for eternity. Well, that's about it for today. In our next chapter, I'll tell you about Grantland Rice's first long look at Man of War, King of Racehorses, and an interview with the King of Jockeys who rode Big Red and never forgot the thrill, Earl Sandy. Until then, this is Jimmy Powers transcribed saying, so long for now.
back in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly gypsum wheat. Back in the saddle again, riding the range once more, toting my old 44, where you sleep out every night and the only law is right. Back in the saddle again. Whoopee-tie-i-o, rocking to and fro, back in the saddle again. Whoopee-tie-i-yay, I go my way, back in the saddle again. I'm back in the saddle again, out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lonely jimson weed. Back in the saddle again, riding the range once more, toting my old 44, where you sleep out every night and the only law is right. Back in the saddle again. Whoopee-tie-i-o, rocking to and fro, back in the saddle again. Whoopee-tie-i-yay, I go my way, back in the saddle again.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY and Gene Autry with Back in the Saddle Again from 1939. We also heard Jimmy Powers narrate Babe Ruth on the Grantland Rice Story from 1955. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows. On the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.